The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
America, bonjour, hi, Kennedy. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. Congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks, who have won their first NBA title since 1971. I think Mike Gallagher, congressman from Wisconsin, is going to be insufferable today, but he's on. Jeff Bezos, hats off to you. Up and down you went. I watched the entire 11-minute flight. And congratulations. Not sure about the cowboy hat, but that was great. Cryptocurrency markets slide as Treasury Secretary Yellen leads mounting regulatory scrutiny. They're down to $29,000 per Bitcoin. I warned you folks about that, but I must point out, I warned you about GameStop and AMC, and they had a good day yesterday. One of these days, I think they're going to pick up RIDE, R-I-D-E, which is Lordstown Motors, and I hope they bring some pop to the valley for us. Three existing drugs, according to the Jerusalem Post, fight coronavirus with almost 100% success in a Jerusalem lab. These are three existing drugs. No, ivermectin is not one of them, but there are. One is an AIDS drug, and one is an antiviral, and one is called Daraplasib, which currently treats atherosclerosis, Flumenitib, which is a cancer drug, and an HIV medicine, but they work. That's good news, because it's bad news, really bad news, on the COVID updates. 83% of U.S. cases now, new cases, are the Delta variant. So the Delta variant has taken over the country. The Johnson & Johnson vaccine, still effective, but is less effective against the Delta variant than it is against the other variants of the shot. 99% of deaths from COVID these days are from the Delta variant. The WHO leader endorses the Olympics. Who cares is what that ought to be. Nobody trusts them. Indonesia has extended the restrictions on COVID during Eid, the big Muslim holiday, which is about to begin, and lots of cases at the Olympics. Indeed, the Wall Street Journal reports that the 2021 Olympics are turning into a $20 billion bust for Japan. As Toyota, among other sponsors, withdraw, they want no association with it in COVID-panicked Japan. There will be no spectators. Many athletes in the Olympic Village have tested positive. The U.S. is going to approve Nord Stream 2. This is a disaster. It strengthens Russia. In 6 months, Joe Biden has done more for Russia than Donald Trump, allegedly under the control of the Russians from the far-left kooks. For 4 years, Joe Biden just handed them a gift that even President Obama wouldn't give them. Nord Stream 2 is going to be approved. Russia is going to control the gas supplies of Europe. The Royal Navy, Hail Britannia, is going to station two patrol ships permanently in Asia. Good for them, joining the American fleet, the Japanese fleet, and other allied fleets like Australia in the area. John Kerry gave an endless speech about climate change yesterday. No one paid attention. President Biden has nominated a leading Google critic, Jonathan Cantor, as an antitrust lawyer, to head the antitrust division at the Department of Justice. This is excellent news. Excellent news. Cantor is going to bring teeth to that. The Israeli envoy to the United States, Gilead Erdan, I don't know Gilead, is urging that 35 states that have anti-BDS law. BDS stands for boycott, divest, and I can't remember. BDS just means treat Israel like pariah state. 35 states have legislation, including Florida, Illinois, New York, sanction. Boycott, diversify, and sanction. Divest and sanction. Boycott, divest, and sanction. Florida, Illinois, New York, and New Jersey are among the states that take action against people who participate in BDS. Ben and Jerry's is definitely doing that. And today's guest includes Leland Vitter, I hope you are watching News Nation Now, the brand new station. Leland has now started his prime time. I mentioned Representative Gallagher. I'll be joined by Oklahoma Senator James Lankford for an update on whether or not we're going to have a infrastructure bill today. I doubt it. And former Energy Secretary Ernie Moniz is joining me today to talk about the Iran deal. The Iranian parliament yesterday, the Iranian National Security Council, to be specific, said they were not going to accept the deal. And negotiations are off until the new hardliner comes in. They've seen the deal. American congressmen haven't seen the deal. That's a bit of a discrepancy. I believe the big four ought to see the deal, and the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee and House Intelligence Committee and their ranking minority members as well. Yesterday, I had a piece in the Washington Post. You can find it by Googling Hugh Hewitt in Washington Post on virus complacency. And it got quite a lot of play because they pointed out the obvious, supported by the Journal of American Medical Association and other studies, that we really don't know if we have passed the worst point in the United States. We have hundreds of millions of cases of the coronavirus abroad in the world, each one of them struggling to mutate so that it becomes a more easily replicable disease. What that means is we could have a mutation that comes back vaccine resistant or completely avoiding a vaccine, disinterested in the vaccine, could care less about the vaccine. We could have a variant that comes back that is a far deadlier variant. We can have a variant that comes back that attacks children, a variant that comes back that attacks young adults like the 1918 influenza, the great influenza. If you've read John Barry's book, you will know that in the summer of 1918, an already deadly flu virus went through a series of mutations, a dozen, I believe, Mr. Barry says, and emerged in its super killer form. Then it trailed off. Most people are assuming that coronavirus has already reached its apex predator moment. That's not necessarily so. All we know is that the vaccines we have work against Delta and against the other variants. There's a new variant called Epsilon in California. We'll eventually get to an Omega variant, and then we'll start over, Alpha variant. There are variants all over the world. Some of them go away, and we don't even notice them. The British variant spread more rapidly. The Delta variant spreads very rapidly. It's very contagious. It is not necessarily more deadly. But as I think you saw last night, Sean Hannity urging everyone. Now, I've been urging everyone to get vaccinated from day one. And I've been warning about this virus since December of 2019. I'm first to the bell in the media. If they gave out Pulitzers for being right about this virus, I would get it. I don't care. All I care about is that you don't die. So, as I've said for 18 months, go and get the vaccine when it's available. It is now available everywhere. Literally everywhere. All you have to do is to go into a drugstore. You can call ahead. There might be five drugstores in your town. Only four of them have it. Doesn't cost anything. The adverse reactions are few and far between. You sit in the chair for 15 minutes to make sure you don't get it. We're up to about 50% of America has received the two doses. We should get to 100% to be as protected as possible against another rogue virus. Slow it down, at least. Cause it to have fewer hosts, let it mutate less often. But India has 3 million dead. I want to repeat that. The estimate of the dead from the virus in India, the real estimate, is 3 million dead. Now, nobody tells you outside of the United States how many people have died. We have about 650,000 people who have died here. We don't know the China number. We don't know the Russian number. We get estimates from various places. If the real numbers came out, people would stop in their tracks and say, what? And the answer is 3 million dead in India, according to one study that actually tried their best to collect statistics from a concentrated area and extrapolate them. We don't know. It's not a count, not people going around body to body and sampling. But we do know that it's ravaging Indonesia, it is ravaging Vietnam, it is ravaging South Africa and parts of Central America and South America. We are blessed to be out of it. We got the vaccine first. Our wonderful Operation Warp Speed worked. Take advantage of that. Get vaccinated. Don't die. Big anti-vaxxer died yesterday in Massachusetts. I'm sorry to hear that. I don't take any joy in anyone dying, but it's simply not true that the risks outweigh the benefits. It's not even close. You need to go and get the vaccine today. There won't be a line. Went to the drugstore to pick up something else yesterday. Nobody was there. Go out and get it and come right back to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. There's a new kid on the news block. News Nation Now has premiered. Leland Vittert is now anchoring their 8 p.m. hour. Hello, Leland. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Tell us a little bit about the launch. How did it go? And when can people see it? And where do they see it? It's on channel 900 on my cable system, but I've got the magic blue button. I just say, bring me News Nation Now. How do people find it?
Well, 307 also on DirecTV, or you go to newsnationnow.com and click on Channel Finder. You put in your zip code. It's remarkably simple. My mother was able to do it. My dad has a hard time.
Well, your dad is like me. I like my magic blue button. So, Leland, when did your primetime show begin? A week ago?
No, we started on Monday. Believe it or not, we announced it formally on your radio broadcast a couple of weeks ago when we finally had a launch date. So July 19th. And then yesterday we announced that Dan Abrams of Mediaite and of ABC is coming over, and he'll be anchoring the hour after me, which is going to be great. Talking about crime and bring back some of the analysis that they did on Live PD, and then also some media analysis. He'll be a little bit more opinionated than we are. As you point out, we're an old fashioned news show. They sort of approaches everything without fear or favor, but it doesn't mean we don't have a point of view. It doesn't mean we don't have a little bit of fun. And we've tried to do that over the past couple of days that we've done this. It's hard to imagine. It's always funny. I think you can attest to this as well, that you put so much into launch day, and then after the show ends on launch day, you realize you got to get up the next morning and do it again.
Now, there's a lot that's unglamorous about television news. Yesterday, I was on the line with the news partner for the Nixon Library. We are hosting a California gubernatorial debate among recall candidates. And the television partner, it's very technical. How many lines? What's the fiber optics? You went 3-camera, 4-camera shoot. It's not really glam, right? A lot of this is blocking and tackling. How did the blocking and tackling go?
Well, I always like to leave the report cards to other people, but my mother liked it. She was a fan. The lighting was pretty good. The set looks great. And, you know, finally we're being able now to have guests back on set and in the studios, which is a great thing. It really adds so much more when you can have a conversation with somebody sitting next to you. So we did that. We did a pretty interesting segment 2 days ago about the violence in Chicago. It had a pastor on who's a guy who had lived on a roof deck for 90 days. To bring awareness to gun violence. And the people who I serve in my communities are getting killed left and right. And it was pretty interesting to hear him. And then we had one of the local radio talk show hosts here on as well. And she was talking about how people have just become numb to this kind of violence. And you think about that and compare and contrast it to what happened on Saturday night at the National Stadium, which is as tragic as that was, the drive-by shooting outside of National Stadium. People were just aghast by the how could there be a shooting, and something must be done, and this is so dangerous. And a lot of people in American cities are living that every day.
Now, Leland, you've done two nights of broadcast. That means I think you have five blocks, A, B, C, D, and E. That means at least 10 stories. What has been leading your news to give people a sense that you are not an opinion show, you're an old-fashioned news-driven show?
COVID, both nights, and sort of the deja vu that we're experiencing. I wouldn't be surprised if we lead it again tonight with COVID. We're talking to a doctor out in Los Angeles and a chef out in Los Angeles who's been very outspoken about the mask mandates out there, and a doctor who's going to tell us why it's necessary to have them, and a chef who says that his business is getting crushed by them.
Now, the Delta variant is very alarming. At the same time, there is almost 100% protection against any kind of hospitalization if you've got the vaccine. Do you present those statistically, Lynn Vittert, on News Nation Now, or are you just covering the epic disaster that is India with 3 million dead, et cetera?
No, we've talked a lot about that because the statistic out of Los Angeles is really, really stunning and one that you have to think about, which is that of all the people who are in the hospital in Los Angeles County, which now, according to our friend Matt Drudge, is saying it really is becoming a new COVID hotspot in America, of all of the people who are in the hospital, somewhere between 100% and 99.5% of them are people who are unvaccinated, which is a pretty stunning statistic. It shows you that if you have the vaccine, the chance of you going into the hospital with COVID, as I did before I had the vaccine, is nil, which is stunning and absolutely great news. And we've talked a lot about that. We've also talked a lot about what can be done against the Delta variant in these communities where there's a lot of people who don't want to get the vaccine. And one of the things that we've tried to do is have a conversation where we acknowledge that a couple of things can be true at once. One is the vaccine works. And second of all, to actually, rather than tell people that if they don't want to get the vaccine, they're, you know, tinfoil hat conspiracy theorists. If people have legitimate concerns, and legitimate is not that it's a microchip, but legitimate may be that, look, we've only tested this for 9 months or for 12 months, and people have questions about that, we're willing to have those conversations and discuss them.
Okay, Leland, I'd like to know as well the balance between domestic and international news. This morning, my first segment every day is I do a dozen to 15 stories of headlines. The Royal Navy is assigning two ships to the South China Sea on a permanent basis. Tokyo Olympics are going to lose $20 billion. What's your mix of domestic and foreign news?
It's interesting you say that. Probably about 60-40 domestic, 40% international. I'm an old foreign correspondent, so for some reason I find everything overseas interesting. But so many things now touch back home. We did the Ben and Jerry's boycott of selling ice cream in places in Israel last night. We talked about that. We talked about the Tokyo Olympics, just as you mentioned. And I think tonight we'll be talking about China. So somehow you managed to call out our rundown this morning, which means I have less to do and I can maybe even go get a nap before showtime.
Well, let me ask you, when you're live at 8 p.m. in the East, correct?
Correct, sir.
Okay. So when do you do your story roundtable? There's a cliche that there's a story roundtable on every network every morning at 7 a.m., which I think is kind of silly because most news happens in the course of the day. When do you do your news conference call?
With us, it's an oval table, and we put a big bowl of candy in the middle, which is nice. And we do it about somewhere around 3:30 Eastern. Our team sits down and look, you know, as you know, the news happens throughout the day, so it's living throughout the day. We have an idea, and I'm looking at it right now of what we're going to talk about and what we're going to think about today. And the great thing about having a bunch of good guest book is that you have the opportunity to always upgrade on them. And you have the opportunity to go, okay, we thought we were going to lead with something really fascinating this morning. And by 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we've totally changed that.
Now, I had a discussion with a pro at a different network this weekend about CRT. And I've covered critical race theory a little bit, but I understand its ideological component. I understand where it came from, critical legal theory. I understand what it is. But a lot of people don't. And I asked the individual involved with programming a different network, CRT quote rates. Have you discovered that? Have you covered CRT yet?
We have covered it briefly. And it was interesting. We had a professor on last night. Typically, I'm not a big fan of professors, but this guy was pretty good, a philosophy professor, who compared and contrast the Black Lives Matter movement and sort of the concept of CRT with anti-Semitism and the boycott, divest, and sanction movement that Israel faces right now, and sort of the intersection of those two, and also how the leadership has shared some common folks at the top of both of those movements. So in that sense, yes. Have we sort of done a deep dive into Ibram X. Kendi? No.
All right, last question. How are the numbers? Everybody knows their numbers. Some people don't discuss them. You just launched. If you're in 1,000 homes, I'll be great because it will grow exponentially. But where are you as of today?
Well, the great news is we're in about 80 million homes. So you can find us. And if you have YouTube TV or you don't have cable and you use one of the streaming services, we're there as well. The good news is that we have nowhere to go but up. I think I looked like yesterday. I think it was something like 34,000 viewers in 5,000 in the demo. So we've got nowhere to go but up. And the nice thing is that I think when people sample us, they realize that we are not for everybody. If you're interested in being told exactly what you believe and then have those opinions reinforced, we're not there. The arguments you see on cable news, we don't have. And we talk about it every day with our producers, which is we try to be intentionally boring at times, not dumb and not uninteresting, but we try to sort of dial back the emotion and dial up both the information and our trust that our viewers may not necessarily agree with us, but they're interested in hearing both sides.
I lied, Leland. I have one more question. I believe speed doesn't kill. I think speed thrills. Do you move at a good clip on News Nation now? Because one of the great things about radio is I can move as fast as I want through a story. TV sometimes looks like it's a plodding dinosaur in the tar. How fast do you guys go?
Well, I don't know if I'm a dinosaur. Maybe perhaps like an elephant.
There you go. Trampling all before you.
Elephants can kind of meander when they need to and enjoy the day. And they can also move quite quickly if they have to. And I think there's times that we do both.
Did you cover Bezos yesterday in the space shot?
You know, it's funny. We had it in the rundown and we had some timing issues, so we didn't get to it. But we try to have a little bit of an irreverent view of things. And it was very nice. Mr. Bezos went up and he came back and we were going to quote Tulsi Gabbard, who said the only problem with the Blue Origin rocket is that it came back. So we did that yesterday. And then today we have a data scientist from Harvard. She's going to talk about all this money that is being spent, not only the money of Jeff Bezos and of Richard Branson personally to do for these vanity projects, but also all the public money that you don't really think about it that's going into these and that's being spent on this. And really, what is it worth and could it be put to better use? So we're going to have an interesting dive on that.
Well, Leland Vittert, congratulations, News Nation Now. People can find it again on Channel 900 Inside the Beltway. And what other cable channel, 306, did you say?
Well, 307 on DirecTV, but we're in 80 million homes. So newsnationnow.com, there's a button that says Channel Finder. So simply the caveman can do it. And go on, and then you put in your zip code, it'll tell you where to find us wherever.
And by the way, it's old school news moving fast with Leland, 8 p.m. every night. Congratulations, Leland. Good to talk to you. Continue and press on. Let me now turn to I didn't ask him about commercial breaks. I hope they have sponsors. I think it's going to take off because people want a news station. Really, they do. It used to be cable news. CNN was a news station. Now it's a left-wing chorus with a little bit of news jammed in here and there. They've got some great correspondents. I have a lot of friends over there, but it's like MSNBC on the left and Fox on the right. You have to adjust for the lie of the green. ReliefFactor.com. I don't know if they're sponsoring News Nation Now. I hope they are. It sponsors this radio show and has for years. Why? Because anyone who exercises or gets older every day has got to take it. And I take it in the first hour. And that's what I just did. Icarian and curcumin or resveratrol omega, the only supplement I take. Now, I take a vitamin, of course, because vitamins matter. And occasionally, if I'm stressed out and something has hurt a lot, I'll add a leave to it. But ReliefFactor.com supports the temporary relief of the minor aches and pains that plague the athlete's life. And anyone who's getting older, you're definitely in the latter category. You should be in the former category. And if you don't exercise and you don't move around because it hurts too much, you definitely should try ReliefFactor.com. Tens of thousands of people do it every single day. Many of them go online and extol the praises. It will not work for everyone. It is not magic. It is simply good nutrition with the four natural supplements that support the temporary relief of the minor aches and pains in your life. ReliefFactor.com. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. There was a memorable exchange between Dr. Fauci and Senator Rand Paul in the United States Senate yesterday. You may have read about it. I want you to hear it. It takes 6 minutes, but I want you to hear it. Here is that exchange.
As you are aware, it is a crime to lie to Congress. Section 1001 of the U.S. Criminal Code creates a felony and a 5-year penalty for lying to Congress. On your last trip to our committee on May 11th, you stated that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And yet, gain-of-function research was done entirely in the Wuhan Institute by Dr. Xi and was funded by the NIH. I'd like to ask unanimous consent to insert into the record the Wuhan virology paper entitled Discovery of a Rich Gene Pool of Bat SARS-Related Coronaviruses. Please deliver a copy of the journal article to Dr. Fauci. In this paper, Dr. Xi credits the NIH and lists the actual number of the grant that she was given by the NIH. In this paper, she took two bat coronavirus genes, spike genes, and combined them with a SARS-related backbone to create new viruses that are not found in nature. These lab-created viruses were then shown to replicate in humans. These experiments combine genetic information from different coronaviruses that infect animals but not humans to create novel artificial viruses able to infect human cells. Viruses that in nature only infect animals were manipulated in the Wuhan lab to gain the function of infecting humans. This research fits the definition of the research that the NIH said was subject to the pause in 2014 to 2017, a pause in funding on gain of function. But the NIH failed to recognize this, defines it away, and it never came under any scrutiny. Dr. Richard E. Bright, a molecular biologist from Rutgers, described this research in Wuhan as, "The Wuhan lab used NIH funding to construct novel chimeric SARS-related coronaviruses able to infect human cells and laboratory animals. This is high-risk research that creates new potential pandemic pathogens that exist only in the lab, not in nature. This research matches," these are Dr. Ebright's words, "this research matches, indeed epitomizes, the definition of gain-of-function research done entirely in Wuhan, for which there was supposed to be a federal pause." Dr. Fauci, knowing that it is a crime to lie to Congress, do you wish to retract your statement of May 11th where you claimed that the NIH never funded gain-of-function research in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress.
Microphone. Your microphone.
Senator Paul, I have never lied before the Congress, and I do not retract that statement. This paper that you are referring to was judged by qualified staff up and down the chain as not being gain of function.
You take an animal virus and you increase its transmissibility to humans.
Right.
You're saying that's not gain of function?
Yeah, that is correct. And Senator Paul, you do not know what you are talking about, quite frankly. And I want to say that officially. You do not know what you are talking about.
Let's read from the NIH definition of gain of function. This is your definition that you guys wrote. It says that scientific research that increases the transmissibility among mammals is gain of function. They took animal viruses that only occur in animals, and they increased their transmissibility to humans. How you can say that is not gain of function?
It is not.
It's a dance, and you're dancing around this because you're trying to obscure responsibility for 4 million people dying around the world from a pandemic.
And let's send Dr. Fauci.
Well, now you're getting into something. If the point that you are making is that the grant that was funded as a subaward from EcoHealth to Wuhan created SARS-CoV-2. That's where you are getting. Let me finish.
We don't know.
Well, wait a minute.
The evidence is pointing that it came from the lab. And there will be responsibility for those who funded the lab, including yourself.
I totally resent the lie that you are now propagating, Senator, because if you look at the viruses that were used in the experiments that were given in the annual reports that were published in the literature,
It is molecularly impossible.
No one's saying those viruses caused it.
It is molecularly.
Those viruses caused the pandemic. What we're alleging is that gain of function research was going on in that lab and NIH funded it.
That is
not. Get away from it. It meets your definition and you are obfuscating the truth.
I'm not obfuscating the truth. You're the one.
Time is expired, but I will allow the witness to.
Let me just finish. I want everyone to understand that if you look at those viruses, and that's judged by qualified virologists and evolutionary biologists. Those viruses are molecularly impossible
no one's
to result
they are. No
in
one's
SARS-CoV-2.
Those viruses caused the pandemic. We're saying they are gain-of-function viruses because they were
animal
viruses that became more transmissible in human, and you funded it.
And you
admit the truth.
And you implying.
Senator Paul, your time has expired, and I will allow witnesses to come before this committee.
And you are implying that what we did was responsible for the deaths of individuals. I totally resent that. And if anybody is lying here, Senator, it is you.
We'll be right back, America, on the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Second, take your time.
Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. If you're looking on Skype, I am wearing my 2016 Cleveland Cavaliers NBA hat because that was the greatest comeback in the history of the NBA. They came down from a 3-0 deficit. Now, the Milwaukee Bucks have managed to come back from a 2-0 deficit. Five other teams have done that, and we want to congratulate them. But, of course, we do want to distinguish them from the Cavs, which are the only team ever to come down from a 3-0 deficit. So I want to put them in that second tier with five other teams. There's only one Cavs, 2016, but Mike Gallagher, congressman from Wisconsin, joins us now. I want to congratulate you, Mike. You haven't got any Bucks gear. You don't root for him?
You couldn't just let me have it, Hugh. You couldn't just let me have this one pure.
Oh, I'm letting you have it. Congratulations. Not a bad effort.
Cleveland stuff into it. Not a bad effort. First time in 50 years, Hugh. Feels good. Feels very,
very
good.
Well, I know that it's been a pretty difficult run for Bucks fans. And you got the Greek Freak, and good for him. But, I mean, let's just be honest. Down 2-0, I saw it coming pretty much. The Phoenix Suns are not exactly going into the NBA Hall of Fame of runner-ups, right?
I'd have to review the transcript of last week, but I think it's fair to say you did not see it coming. You had a vested interest in rooting against the Bucks, Hugh. But that's to be expected. By the way, it was very confusing listening to your earlier segment because you started talking about how Mike Gallagher owns seven houses and has a luxury estate. And I'm starting to think, I certainly don't own seven
houses. Oh, no, that's the radio show host, Mike Gallagher. No. You've got the house without wireless in Wisconsin. You've got
That's
the
right.
one with the lousy internet service in the middle of nowhere.
I have a cow on a giant hamster wheel providing electricity for me.
But congratulations. Did you watch the game, I assume?
I did. I did watch the game. It was amazing. Giannis is amazing. 17 and 19 free throws, 14 rebounds, 5 blocks. I mean, the stats speak for themselves. It's awesome.
I mean, if he was LeBron, you'd have something. But I don't think anyone would argue they could beat LeBron in 2016. I just don't even think that's in the – The Suns did get old in a hurry. You got to admit, they kind of fell apart.
They did. I mean, Chris Paul was good last night, but he had a couple old stinkers in the series. So
yeah, and he's
a great player, though.
So is Giannis getting out now to join the Lakers, or does he have another year or two before he joins the Lakers?
No, postgame, he was talking about how, you know, he could have done this the easy way and joined a super team, but he chose to do it the right way, the hard way. So I'm hoping he's in Milwaukee for a while.
My hat's off to him. Has Aaron Rodgers got a house in Colorado yet?
Again, you just can't let me have it.
I'm not
going
to let you have it, Mike Gallagher. I'll take my hat off, though. Greatest champions ever, the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's talk now about the reconciliation bill. Today, Mitch McConnell said in the Punchbowl AM that the debt ceiling limit has to go into reconciliation because not one Republican will vote for it. That's a good strategy. If that is, in fact, the debt ceiling has to pass, obviously. If that's, in fact, going to happen, how do you see them getting a majority in the House?
I don't know. I think it's going to be very difficult. I mean, you're also seeing in the Senate right now, Schumer try and go forward with a procedural vote on an infrastructure bill that isn't written. We're not talking about an infrastructure bill that's going to be revealed. It hasn't even been written. I'm not sure how that works. You're going to ask people to vote to move forward on a bill that they don't know the details. They just have the bare bones details. It's all very opaque to us here in the House. And I think in the House, whatever comes over is going to be very difficult to pass, because I think it puts the moderates in the House, if they're doing a go it alone strategy with everything under the sun, squeezing as much into reconciliation as possible, it puts the moderates in the Democratic Party in a very, very difficult position. And Pelosi has a very fraught coalition she needs to put together. So it's a very bizarre process unfolding right now. I think Schumer's lost even the Republican senators who were part of the bipartisan group that wanted to do something on infrastructure, that were willing to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure because of the bizarre nature of the strategy. And here in the House, I think they're going to hit a big roadblock when they send something over that's just everything under the sun. So we'll see, Hugh. It's very hard to make sense of it right now. It's hard to analyze it without actual bill text. I'm reading the same articles you are, but it's certainly a bad way to run a railroad.
So, Congressman Gallagher, if we can switch over to the Select Committee on January 6th, you are not a member. Jim Banks, your friend and a member of the House Armed Services Committee, my friend, is going to be the ranking minority member. It's a great choice. I hope he gets a very good counsel to serve like Dick Leon served for Dick Cheney on Iran-Contra. What can you tell our audience about Jim Banks?
He's a very serious guy. He works extremely hard. And I think for the media who was hyperventilating about, oh, McCarthy's going to put Marjorie Taylor Greene or this or that on the committee, I think you can expect Jim, you know, though he is very conservative, to bring a sobriety and seriousness to the effort. And I think the other members of the committee will do the same. There's some very talented members of the committee as well. And I think everyone wants to get to the bottom of the security failures that happened on January 6th. I still don't have sufficient answers of, you know, why Pelosi, for example, didn't have more security, why the National Guard wasn't proactively brought in. So my hope is this doesn't devolve into pure partisan theater. But Jim's a very serious guy. And I think Kevin McCarthy made the right choice.
And we'll go into football season. We won't have to worry about him because he's from Indiana. So he's got nothing to follow. And so it was a great choice that way. But I do believe, and tell me if this is possible, a lot of hearings do not succeed because the members take time away from the counsel. If you remember the Kavanaugh hearings, the reason that Brett Kavanaugh got confirmed is the Senate Judiciary Committee brought in a special counsel to question the witnesses who was a professional's professional. The same sort of thing happened with Iran-Contra and Dick Leon, now Judge Dick Leon. Do you see the House Republicans being disciplined enough to let their counsel figure out how many people were on the mall, how many people trespassed on congressional grounds, how many got into the Capitol, how many were violent, how many had a conspiracy theory? I mean, there are lots of questions I want answered, and I want to know where the National Guard was, where the D.C. cops were the Capitol Police. But those are best questions elicited not with histrionics, but with direct questioning by capable counsel.
I do. I mean, this is a disciplined group, and not just Jim, but look at Rodney Davis of Illinois. Rodney Davis is, he's a problem solver. He's a moderate guy. He's a very constructive member of the House. He's not going to be someone that just grandstands and takes the time in order to get his viral moment on social media. Even Jim Jordan. I mean, Jim is very skilled in advancing a line of questioning. I think this is a very disciplined group. I think they're going to have serious questions. They're going to have a very serious approach to the overall effort. And hopefully it moves forward constructively.
Now, Congressman, I advanced the proposition in The Washington Post yesterday that the military ought to require vaccinations for the virus of every member in uniform and including every government employee, ditto the National Guard. I don't know if that's come up before Hask yet, but I am concerned not about the Delta or even the Epsilon variant, but variants down the road that might be vaccine evading and even more virulent and target young people, et cetera. Has that been discussed? What do you think about that mandate? Because the military, when you were a Marine, I'm sure they didn't ask for your permission to give you vaccines.
It has been discussed by the chairman, Adam Smith, and I believe, if memory serves, he's sympathetic to your argument. I'm not there yet. It's not to say I couldn't be persuaded. I certainly think the vaccine should be readily available for every active duty service member and reservist who wants to get it. But for me to be convinced that a 22-year-old in the prime of his health needs to be mandated to get the vaccine, I'm just not there right now. But it's certainly something that's being debated on the Armed Services Committee. And certainly we don't want the Delta variant to sweep through the armed services, find its way onto an aircraft carrier, find its way onto a destroyer, and make combat ineffective the already stressed naval force we have out there. It's something we absolutely need to be on guard against. I myself am vaccinated. I think the vaccine is a remarkable technology. I think it's a remarkable accomplishment of the Trump administration. That's my choice. That's a choice my wife and I made together. We feel very comfortable and safe with the whole thing. I've done my best to promote it. But at the end of the day, I get hesitant when, for example, the left suggests we need to be vaccinating children in schools. I thought Dr. Marty McCary made a very persuasive argument in the Wall Street Journal this week that the data just aren't there to suggest we need to. Now, I know that's a different issue, Hugh, than the military being vaccinated. I don't want to conflate those two arguments, but I have a little bit of hesitancy when we start to talk about mandates for the vaccine. At the same time, I want to do everything possible to promote the vaccine, which, again, I think is a technology that's not just going to help us now, but it's going to unlock a ton of subsequent scientific discoveries.
I would love to have that conversation in front of the committee, because you articulated my concern, which is another carrier go down the road that the Teddy Roosevelt did with the Delta. And then you've lost a carrier presence in the middle of rising tensions in the South China Sea. Let me conclude, Congressman, by asking you about Coast Guard cutters. They're the subject of a Brad Thor novel, and I had no idea of the imbalance of the Coast Guard fleet and the cutter fleet in the high Arctic. I had no idea until I read the Brad Thor thing, and obviously our friend Robert O'Brien had briefed him. Is that being remedied?
You know, it is. Part of the problem is a simple jurisdictional one in the Hill, because the Coast Guard, of course, reports through the Department of Homeland Security, not through the Pentagon. So I'm lucky in that I sit on both the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, which tends to deal with Coast Guard issues, and the Armed Services Committee, which deals with Navy issues. But too often we forget to think about the Coast Guard and think about our cutters at the same time we're having discussions and debates about how to rebuild the Navy. And I think it would be a mistake to think about those in separate silos. They're part of though they're separate services, they're part of the same effort, which is to enhance and project our maritime power. Additionally, we have a big ice breaking problem, particularly on the Great Lakes, that is critical both to our national security and our economic security in the United States. And so it's an issue that too often gets ignored. I'm glad that it's in a Brad Thor novel. I haven't read that, but I will happily pick up the book and enhance the arguments he makes.
It's called Black Ice. Okay, very quickly. Hypersonics. I was talking with hypersonics yesterday. Apparently, we've got 7 different hypersonics under development. How soon do we get them deployed and on a Navy ships?
Not soon enough is the short answer. I really think, Hugh, as we look at the Indo-Pacific and we look at our fundamental challenge, which is to deter a PLA invasion of Taiwan, and as we look at this thorny choice we have between the needs of the next 5 years, the so-called Davidson window that you've heard Hendricks and others talk about, and the long-term needs of the Navy, our biggest bang for buck investment lies with missiles, not just hypersonic missiles, but any INF non-compliant missile, an intermediate range missile, ground launch missile. This is a reversing of what the Chinese have been doing to us for the last decade, building out their PLA rocket force. If we field these missile systems in concert with our allies, I believe we can actually start to build a deterrent posture. And I believe we can do it in the next few years and prevent an absolute disaster, and a World War III scenario. After the Olympics is when this is going to get really hot and heavy. And we are complacent right now, Hugh. We
agree.
Far too complacent.
Congressman Mike Gallagher, always a pleasure. Congratulations on your box. Enjoy the day. And my friends out there in Radioland, don't forget your relieffactor.com. They needed Milwaukee. They were celebrating last night. They pulled a few legs. Gina, the Greek Freak looked like he pulled a muscle there at the end. Relieffactor.com. Icarian Curcumin, Resveratrol, and Omega. Take it every single day. Join the tens of thousands of people, including me, who do take it every single day. I'm coming right back with Brian Westbury. I don't know if he takes relieffactor.com every day, but you should. Westbury is next on The Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I am joined by Brian Westbury of First Trust Portfolio. He is the chief economist for First Trust Portfolio. You can follow him on Twitter at Westbury. Brian and I are going to Atlanta in October to talk about the Biden inflation. And Brian, this is so counterintuitive. Inflation went up and the 10-year treasury went down. It is now at 1.209%. It's the lowest I've ever seen it. Can you explain for the Steelers fans and indeed me how it is that inflation can be on everyone's mind and the 10-year treasury dropped to 1.2%?
I mean, Hugh, there were a bunch of things going on when that happened. And we have the new Delta variant out there. We have the potential of a slowing economy. We have the Biden administration and Congress working on another $3.5 trillion spending deal. And when you put all of that together, what I think a lot of investors were worried that we could shut down the economy again over that Delta variant, or that we were going to have a much slower growing economy as spending waned. Government spending, government stimulus waned. And so I think that helped worry investors that the economy would slow down. But I think the real reason that the 10-year treasury yield is so low, and in fact, the whole what we call the yield curve, everything from 3 month to 6 month to 1 year to 5 year, 7 year, 10 year, 20 year bonds, is that the Federal Reserve is promising to hold the short-term interest rate at zero. That's where it is. And so if you sort of think about this, if the Fed says we are going to hold short-term interest rates at zero for 3 years, well, that means the three-year treasury yield will also be zero. If people think they're going to hold it at zero for 5 years, the five-year treasury will be at zero. So what the Fed is doing, they're the thousand-pound gorilla. When they sit on the raft in the pool, they push down that short end and they can pull the whole raft, in a sense, underwater. And that's what we're seeing. They're pulling interest rates down artificially. And I would, this is a time to borrow at those rates, not invest at those rates.
I had my friend Andrew Del Rey on yesterday talking about buying homes, because on the basis of talking with you last week, I just think the average American ought to be investing in a home right now. But Brian, exactly. What are the long-term impacts of arbitrarily suppressed interest rates? I mean, it's the home market is nuts. People are paying too much for houses, but they don't have any choice. What other long-term impacts come from arbitrarily suppressing interest rates?
Yeah, Hugh, I'm going to mention a couple of names. People don't read anymore, which is sad. I shouldn't say all people, but many people. But they're my favorite economist. I love Milton Friedman. I love a lot of economists. But Ludwig von Mises, an Austrian economist, said that when the Federal Reserve, the government, artificially holds interest rates down, what happens is we get malinvestment, bad investment. And so what happens is that if you can borrow so cheap that you can invest in something that barely makes sense in normal times, you're going to end up pushing resources in the wrong direction. Now, sometimes, like in 2004, 5, 6, 7, 8, that was into housing. Housing was overvalued. But today, housing is not overvalued. The housing is a great investment with inflation picking up. The other thing is the way the Fed keeps interest rates down is that they print a lot of money. So if I have a bumper crop of corn, the price of corn comes down. If I have a bumper crop of dollars, the price of a dollar, the interest rate comes down. And so what the Federal Reserve is doing is causing people to have a unclear picture of the future. Rates are lower than they should be. It looks like there's no risk in the economy when there is. And then on top of that, we get inflation. And then the last little tidbit here is that in the early 1970s, when the Federal Reserve did this same thing, now interest rates were at a different level back then. The Fed was holding the federal funds rate, not at zero, but at about 3, and they pulled the 10-year treasury down to about 5%. And it sounds like 5% today is a really high interest rate. But if you would have bought in 1972 a 10-year treasury at 5%, the inflation rate over the next 10 years while you held that bond averaged 10%.
Yeah, so
you would have lost 5% a year. Yeah.
Brian, when we come together on October 13th in Atlanta, I'm going to ask you to explain Bitcoin. I've got 5 seconds. Is Bitcoin in part a response to these artificially low interest rates?
It is. People think they're going to be able to force the government to accept a private currency. The government doesn't have to.
It doesn't have to. Brian Westbury, always a pleasure. We will be together in October in Atlanta. More details on that coming up. Don't go anywhere, America. Hour 3 of the Hugh Hewitt Show ahead. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home, or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Glory America, bonjour, hi Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by one of my great friends in the United States Senate, Senator James Lankford, one of the most conservative members of the Senate, also one of the most genteel, soft-spoken, well-respected, and genuinely liked members of the Senate. So we always are glad to have him here. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I should say aw shucks after that introduction.
You should aw shucks, but it's deserved. I wouldn't say it otherwise. Senator, you are on finance, so I want to bring up 3 things. The debt limit is coming, the reconciliation bill is coming, and the infrastructure bill may or may not be coming. Let's take them in reverse order. As of Wednesday morning, July 21st, what do you expect today when Chuck Schumer moves a vote on the infrastructure so-called compromise bill?
So he will move to a bill with no text. In fact, the text is not even written yet, and say, I want to start debate on it today, and it will go down. It should be a pretty basic statement to say we're not going to debate something if no one has literally not read it, because it's literally not been written yet. So that's a whole new level of we've got to pass it before we know what's in it, to a point to say let's vote on it before we even have it written yet. So no, that will fail today. That allows, by the way, procedurally, Schumer will still be able to bring it back up whenever he wants to. Just because it fails today doesn't end it. It puts it in this pause that he can bring up at any moment in the days ahead. And I would expect he would try to do that again, depending on what happens.
Now, Senator Lankford, I have been amazed by the left, right, center agreement that this makes no sense for Senator Schumer to do. Have you discerned some master plan at work in the majority leader's mind that is somehow eluding every reporter in D.C.?
No, the only thing I can think of is he's trying to just push it and to say, if this is going to happen, let's have it happen right now, because if it's not going to happen, then I want to just cram all this same information into this giant tax and spending spree bill that they're pulling together to come up next. And I think he's saying, if we're not going to get a bipartisan bill done, then I'm just going to make the other bill even larger and it'd be able to keep going from there. And so I think he's just trying to discern, is this going to happen or not? It's the best I can tell. Quite frankly, it's a terrible way to be able to actually legislate when you know we're working towards 60. He keeps trying to say, well, we can't get to 60. We can't get to 60. So Republicans are so recalcitrant. And then he continues to do stuff like this, where even people on the left say, well, what in the world? Why would you do it this way? But he'll turn around and blame Republicans when it's over, and the willing media we'll just take it up and just say, yes, Republicans blocked this measure.
You know, I think it's pretty threadbare. I don't think it's going to work. But now let me jump over reconciliation to the debt ceiling, because Leader McConnell is quoted in Punchbowl News this morning as telling Punchbowl the debt ceiling has to be raised in the reconciliation because not one Republican will vote for it. And if that is the case, then reconciliation has got to move in a hurry. Is that, in fact, the correct assessment of the consequences of Leader McConnell's statement?
Well, that would be correct. The debt ceiling does not have to move until probably 2 months from now. It ends. The actual debt ceiling deadline is the end of July. But there will be what's called extraordinary measures that the Treasury can take up that will extend it out for the next couple of months that they can continue to be able to do. So it doesn't have to be done by the end of July. But Democrats are going to have to do this. And the reason is we've been very focused. Our conference has been clear. I've been very clear for years. We should not do a debt ceiling without actually debating debt and deficit and talking about how do we stop adding more debt and deficit. You can't solve the deficit that we have in a single year, but you can certainly change the trajectory, which we did. And you go back to 2011 and 12 in trying to be able to change the way that we were actually doing budgeting, and we actually reduced spending for a couple of years there, trying to get us back on the right trajectory. That's long gone. We've got to actually do real reforms. I've got bills like ending government shutdowns, things that get us back to actually debating again the budget issues, trying to be able to resolve how we handle all the different budget procedures. We've got to get to some structural changes so that we get a different outcome, because if we keep doing the same thing, we're going to get the same results, and this is not working for our American public.
Now, this audience is pretty savvy about what reconciliation is. It's a budget mover that only requires a simple majority as opposed to 60 votes.
Right.
And it allows a House budget resolution and a Senate budget resolution, which can be passed by simple majority in the committee, to be reconciled and passed with a simple majority. And that's where you can do tax and spend. That's all you can put into reconciliation. If it's not germane to taxing and spending, it can't get in.
Right.
If a debt limit has to be a part of that, doesn't that blow up the Bernie plan?
Well, the Bernie plan, I would hope, gets blown up regardless. He wants to do a $6 trillion tax and spend plan. Democrats have said, well, we will settle only for a $3.5 trillion plan, which, by the way, equals about the total number of amount of spending that we do on a typical year for everything, for all spending that they want to do in addition. This would push us to about $12 trillion that the Democrats are pushing to pass this year, when a typical year we're going to spend about $4 trillion. So the numbers are so enormous that we lose track of really how big these numbers really are. And I think that's part of the problem, is they continue to just be able to throw out these giant numbers. If I can make – I know it's hard to do numbers, but one of the best ways that I've seen on this is if you talk about seconds rather than dollars – a million seconds is about 11 and a half days. A billion seconds is 31 and a half years. And a trillion seconds is 31,600 years.
Wow.
So the difference between...
Can you repeat that?
Yeah,
that's really great.
A million seconds is 11 and a half days. A billion seconds is 31 and a half years. And a trillion seconds is 31,600 years.
So they want to do $3.5 trillion minimum, and Bernie wants $6 trillion, which takes us into the 100,000 to 200,000 years.
Yeah, the numbers are enormous. Again, we just get used to hearing these numbers: billions, trillions, you know, millions. What's the difference on that? There's an enormous difference between all of these, and so the size gap that they're talking about in spending, again, talking about in one bill, in this tax and spending bill that they're bringing up, this reconciliation. That is $3.5 trillion, equal to what is a typical year of total spending. They want to do just on top of all other spending, on top of the $2 trillion that they did that caused so much inflation earlier in this year and so many issues. They want to create all these new entitlements. They want to create all this radical change in how we do tax policy. And the simplest way to say it is, everything that Bill Clinton did when he was president on ending welfare as we know it and ending the era of big government, they want to undo all of that. The current Democrat Party is rejecting everything from the Democrats of the 90s, whether it be Hyde Amendment, whether it be limiting the size of government, whether it be limiting spending or trying to deal with deficit. They reject everything the Democrats did in the 1990s and said that was all wrong. We're now going to spend all we want. We're going to break the Hyde Amendment. We're going to pay for abortions with federal fundings. We're going to do everything else. So it is a radical shift for the left.
Now, Senator Lankford, you have some friends across the aisle. You're well known for getting along, even though you don't vote with them and you oppose them every way you can. I am curious if they talk to you about adding $3.5 or more trillion when inflation is taken off. I don't know what the people of Oklahoma are experiencing, but in Virginia and California, inflation's in the saddle.
It is tremendous inflation right now, whether it be wood for construction materials, aluminum, metals, windows, siding, whether it be gasoline that's increased $1 a gallon, whether it be groceries. Everything, the prices would go up. And most folks in Oklahoma don't talk about inflation. They just say, why does everything cost so much now? It just changed dramatically. And it's changed dramatically since March. And we can go back and look at it and go, yeah, that's when that $2 trillion bill dropped in March. And then we've watched this dramatic shift that has actually occurred. And I know, you know, many Obama economists and everybody else stepped out early and said, don't do this to the Biden team. They rejected it. And now they're talking about doubling the size of it and doing it again.
Now, Senator, in terms of that, you're running for re-election this year. I think you've got a pretty easy race. What's your website, by the way, your campaign website?
Well, I'm actually inside the building, inside a federal building, so I can't run
it right
now.
You can't say that.
Figure it out, but
okay, people can figure it out. I am curious when you look ahead, what will be the issues in this cycle? I think inflation is going to be the issue in national security. What do you think is going to be the
I think inflation will be a huge issue. I think the issues like what's happening on the southwest border, and people can see with their eyes the change in policies. I think it'll be a big issue about employment. There'll be lots of folks that are working, and they say, I know somebody, whether it's my cousin, my neighbor, or somebody else that used to work alongside of me that's now not working, staying home, just getting free money. And there'll be a real frustration with that. So there's some key areas that are both economic, job, and social issues that I think a lot of people will look at and go, why don't I feel as safe as I used to? Why is crime rate going up? Why do we have greater crossings illegally in the southwest border? Why do we have prices that are going up this way? And they'll ask a simple question. How do we put a check on this presidency? Because this is going exactly the wrong way.
Well, now then, last minute, Senator, there is absolutely no reason that the Democrats cannot pass a reconciliation bill with a debt ceiling. If the government shuts down, it's because of the Democrats.
That's
Has
correct.
That been clearly communicated? They have the whole government. They have the majority. They can pass the debt ceiling, and they can do it via reconciliation. Has that been clearly communicated in Oklahoma?
No, it is clear. Democrats have made it clear, quite frankly, that we're in charge and we're going to do whatever we want to be able to do. And they're going to try to push through the reconciliation bill. It's striking. When we were in charge in 2017, the reconciliation bills that we were doing were reducing taxes, reducing regulations, reducing burdens on the American people. They come in charge and immediately they want to do the largest tax increase in American history. They want to do the largest spending bill in American history. They want to dramatically increase debt. So it's pretty stark, the differences right now.
Senator James Lankford, always good to talk to you. Thank you for joining me. I'll be right back. America, don't go anywhere. It's the UU.